Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. Steven is in house. We have a new whiskey. It is Black Dog Black Reserve Whiskey. It's an Indian version of Scotch-style whiskey, and I really like it. Now, you're a bit under the weather, so I don't know if
I'm not sure if I like it or not. I can't necessarily taste it. Let me adjust my mic here. I got a little bit of a head cold coming on, I think, with all the travel this week and being around kids and, parents and families yesterday. I caught something, so I can't taste it.
I'm scoring 89. It's a blended whiskey. It's got a pretty good body to it, and you can criticize my review when your taste buds are back online. You said you were traveling a lot. You were traveling back and forth to Detroit, Michigan for a meet for a charity event. Take it away.
Yeah, no, it was a good meet. I did okay. Not what I wanted to do. Last couple meets haven't been great for me in terms of what I wanted to do. Because it's the thing about powerlifting. I know yesterday you were just like, oh, you should be proud of what you're doing. But it's a sport where you're chasing yourself.
Right.
Right? There's other people and you compete. But, I don't really do it for the cool medals and trophies.
Well, you should, because you got one really cool trophy.
I got a few. Actually, there were
that one I remember was really cool.
Right, but for me, it's a hobby. It's an endeavor. It's something that set goals for myself, and then when you don't achieve them, that they're disappointing. No matter what it looks like on the outside, to everyone else.
I hear you. You're a competitive guy with high standards, and you've hit levels that are fucking ridiculous in the past.
Right. It's just frustrating when you can't get to a certain level, especially when you've been there before. But it was good. And the big thing, it was for the Hope Kids through Relentless, and it's a charity that donates money to families of ailing kids, some with terminal diseases or some with lifelong diseases that allows parents to pay medical bills, which allows kids to play sports and go on vacations and experience things that they wouldn't necessarily be able to experience just because the family's resources get drained pretty quick when you've got kids with serious health conditions. So that's what it was for. I ended up raising about $2,600.
Damn. What was your goal?
My initial goal was $1,500.
Okay.
And then, I pushed it to $2,000 and then $2,500 and then at the last minute, I said, let's get 3,000. You keep going. But
tell your people supporting you, we're good.
Right.
We don't need any more.
No, we're good. Stop. So I did that. And then as a group overall with all the, all the lifters who drew money in, we ended up raising over $100,000. To go to some different families which is a great number. But once you start to divide it up, it doesn't quite go as far, but it was still cool, and that's the largest amount of money raised to date by the group, and they've been doing this for 7 years. So it was cool to be a part of the biggest one. So hopefully next year, I can raise more, and as a group we raise even more.
Sounds good. Again, great cause, and getting a bunch of guys picking up heavy things together as a way to culminate is kind of a cool thing. So, yeah, well done.
And then maybe I'll maybe put some pictures or something up on our Instagram and Twitter.
The picture of you clearing 771 in a deadlift, you look like a fucking freak. That obviously stresses out all your muscles. You look as Hulk-like as any human I've ever seen in person.
I did get it. Actually, I sent that picture, or I put that picture up on my personal social media stuff. And one of the guys in the gym, he said, how does your chest look good on a deadlift? And I'm like, I'm not 100% sure I can give you a good answer to that. All I can do is just say thank you for the compliment. And maybe it has something to do with the unhealthy amounts of pre-workouts and caffeine that I took prior to the meet. Instant striation.
Tested positive for Monster energy drink?
Yeah, basically. It was because it's a long day.
Right.
And I'm really what really sucks is that I met a lot of different cool little kids who are tough and they're survivors and they're, you know, really inspirational. But every time I was introduced to one or talking to one, I never had my phone or...
So you couldn't get a picture.
And I don't have any pictures with these kids and they're great. There's one little boy, Brian, who had a really bad spinal issue when he was born. And they corrected a lot of things through various surgeries. But... he was having some issues with nerves and his bowels, so he couldn't go to the bathroom, and he had no way to kind of control it. Well, he's going to have surgery next week to kind of fix that, and, you know, it should resolve a lot of things for him. But, I mean, the kid's been through so much, and he just was just the happiest little kid.
Roughly how old?
He couldn't have been any older than 5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it was... It's a good experience. It instantly, you know, I didn't feel great going into this meet. Like, I felt strong. I did. I felt strong and solid, and I felt healthy. You know, no issues with my knees or elbows or shoulders, but I just didn't feel powerful and explosive, right? Which is what you need.
Sure.
In an event where you're moving weight one time as fast as you can, and so, you know, I went in not expecting to hit a huge total. You know, and. Once I kind of got there and got into it, I, you know, the whole time I'm just like, well, you know, should I pull it out? Should I, whatever. And then you get there with the kids and you're just like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, like, just go up there and rip it for the kids. And I did. And I think a lot of that deadlift was as much about, you know, giving those kids a little bit of a show. It was the biggest lift. It was the biggest deadlift of the meet.
The flex in the bar. At the in that picture you put out was something to behold.
Yeah, when you put that much weight on those bars, man, they bend, especially the deadlift bars, because they're a little thinner. They get a little bit more whip in them.
Why are they thinner? Because people do reverse grip, or
no? I think they just they design them better. Yeah, they design them so people can grip them better. You know, we use 3 different bars. There's a Texas squat bar that's a little bit thicker that weighs about 65 pounds.
And do that probably to spread the weight out on your back a bit more?
Okay. Yeah. And then we used a standard power bar for bench and then a special deadlift bar for deadlift. So, you know, some people say using a deadlift bar is cheating, and I challenge you to out deadlift me. You can have a deadlift bar. I'll have a stiff bar, and we'll see how that goes.
All right. There,
not you. Not I know. You.
Well, my shoulder's still fucked up from a couple weeks ago. All right. So last week when we recorded, unfortunately, we recorded on the day of the mass shooting in Pittsburgh, where a guy who was taken alive and will ultimately be tried for 11 murders and is eligible for the death penalty. And I forget the guy's name, and frankly, don't even know if I want to give it air anyway. But we talked about that. Sorry, we didn't talk about that because it was happening essentially while we were on the air. And I don't want to dismiss that as a news topic for our show, because we owe it the respect and grief that it deserves. But there's really nothing we can say at this point that hasn't been said that I can think of.
No. And I want to make sure that the one thing I don't want to contribute to, and I won't say this, and I don't think it should be said, but there was a lot that of, you know, all the conversation that went on about this, there was a lot that was, you know, blaming Trump, blaming the Republicans for, you know, because of their rhetoric and because of things that they were saying, this guy did this and it's their fault. And I will always take the stance that it's the individual who chooses to pick up a gun, walk in a place, and massacre people. I don't care what that person was told. There's nothing that Trump said at any point in time that said, go pick up a gun and go murder 11 people. You know,
I agree.
I think the reality, I mean, if you want to say, oh, well, you know, had, I mean, because the thing is, people do crazy shit all the time. You know, I mean, like, how, like, what are you blaming, you know, the guy who shot up the theater in Colorado? Why did that happen? Right? Like, I mean, it's because we all agree because he was fucking nuts. And this is no different. And if you're going to say, well, you have to watch what you say because you never know what some crazy person might go and do because of it. Well, I mean, again, what about, Jodie Foster, or the one guy went after Reagan because of Jodie Foster, allegedly, right?
Yeah, no.
So we're gonna blame Jodie Foster for...
People did.
For being just a cute little girl? I mean, come on, like,
it was her role in Taxi Driver as a 12-year-old prostitute.
Didn't she get raped in that movie?
No, you're thinking of The Accused. Okay. She got raped by the accused. And in Taxi Driver, she's a prostitute. And she's like 12 or 14 years old. And De Niro defends her.
Yes.
And he became enamored with her. John something Hinckley?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Not Earl, not John Earl, but John something Hinckley, yeah. He's out, by the way. He's out of prison.
Well, yeah, and we'll talk about that. But
no.
Not that, but we'll talk about kind of that principle. Because what are you going to keep him in jail forever?
Right, right.
You know, I mean, like, that's the thing. You know, people get pissed when people get out of jail. And it's like, guys, we can't lock everybody up forever because we don't, like, I mean, like, they spend inordinate amount of time in prison, 20, 30 years. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, that was just an off-the-cuff remark. But anyway, yeah, so this guy's going to go to court. And the one thing I want to qualify, though, and again, I'm not making this political, but this was a legit, like, per the term, hate crime. This guy was an anti-Semitic, hated Jews, and targeted Jews, which I know, thank you, Captain Obvious, but this is the worst attack on American soil of Jews in our history. And it happened in a neighborhood that I actually know a little bit about. My dad used to live in Pittsburgh. You've got like some Pittsburgh ties.
I'm a Steeler fan. I mean, that's where that happened is, what, I mean, 1,000 yards away from you know, from the kind of center of, you know, between the, God, I want to say Three Rivers, but...
it is Three Rivers.
No, oh, Hinesfield.
Now it's Hinesfield. Sorry. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, showing my age a little bit. But Hinesfield and PNC Park and all that stuff, it's not that far from that area. And, you know, having, you know, driven through that area, you know, hunting for, you know, random hole-in-the-wall food spot, it's very sobering. And then when you think about the victims, I mean, these are Jewish people who, you know, were alive during the Holocaust and World War II. And whether they escaped the Holocaust or survived it or were able to avoid it, you know, you can't imagine what sort of fear they had to have lived in for years and what sort of trauma that had to have caused them, you know, to know that there was a person systematically killing people who were like them because of who they were. And so I don't know if you ever get over that. And then when you're in your safe place, you know, your synagogue, your temple, your place of worship, the one place where you go to get away from all the negativity, and someone kicks the door in and starts shooting you like a fish in a barrel, you know, it's really sad for obviously the people who didn't make it, but even the people who are alive, they have to be wondering what is going on now to where it feels like we're back there. And I'm not saying this is World War II Germany. It's
not. Right.
But, I mean, that's got to be a traumatic feeling for the people who, I mean, it's traumatic to survive something like that anyway. And when you take into account what some of their experiences are, it's even that much worse.
One thing I want to call Trump out for, and people out for in general, is the notion that had there been an armed guard in the synagogue, that this could have been prevented, in my opinion, is ludicrous. One, we can't put armed guards in every fucking religious place or church. Second of all, he shot four cops. So we should also say, you know, as much as we criticize bad police behavior, we still respect the profession. And four officers ran into that situation and ended up getting shot. I don't believe any of them were critically injured.
They weren't killed.
But they were hurt.
They
got shot.
Right. I mean, and
so,
you know, I mean, in that situation,
that's not more guns. I'm a gun guy. More guns is not the solution in this case. You can't have.
Right. I mean, could he have helped? Maybe. I mean, there's a 50-50 chance that maybe guy busts the door open and there's an armed guard right there and he's able to stop it. Maybe.
Maybe.
Right?
He gets shot first.
Right. And then exactly. Maybe the guy kicks the door open, looks to his left, sees the guy, puts a bullet in his head and continues on his way.
Which I would consider the more likely of the two. All right. But so that's my one critique of Trump is he actually came out and said, you know, had there been an armed guard toting the NRA line. And I'm also not giving Trump a pass on the ads that he's run. I mean, they're political ads. I know we're a couple days away from the midterm election. I'm not going to say this.
I voted Thursday.
You voted? Good for you.
I had to.
Good, yeah. Out of town. Right. And I was thinking about voting early just because I could. And then I thought, you know, I kind of want to see what it's like at the polls on Tuesday. I think you get a really interesting vibe for the day at both events.
I don't think you will, and you won't, especially here. Right in Cleveland, Northeast Ohio, and especially in this neighborhood, I don't think that you'll really get a vibe. One, there's never going to...
What was the vibe like early voting? Because I think you get a vibe there.
It was... So early voting, you have to go to the Board of Elections in downtown Cleveland. And there were a lot of people voting. There were two parking lots. There were two parking lots for the Board of Elections, one directly behind the building and then one like across the street behind another building. And it both parking lots were full. They had police there directing traffic, cones set up. You know, it was basically one car in, one car out. You know, it's kind of what slowed down my exit to Detroit because it took longer than I thought it would to vote. But there were, I mean, there were a ton of people there. I mean, there was a line. Now, it didn't take me long. I think the whole process took me 20 minutes.
Okay, that's great.
But, you know, the vibe was, I mean, it's downtown. And, you know, a majority of the people voting were, you know, mostly black. And it was a pretty good mix. But, I mean, people were openly, people weren't too open about it. There was one woman in particular. I shouldn't say people. There was one woman in particular who was just in her thing and just like, Sherrod Brown, whoever the Democrat was for judge, you know, or the person that, you know, seemed most, like, you know, just right down the party line, which I thought was interesting. I kind of pulled my head back like, ma'am.
She was saying that in the booth next to
you? Yeah, in the booth. Well, like, as she's circling, you know, who she's voting for Congress, what judge she's voting, like, she went all the way down the line.
How many people were there out, like slinging flyers and doing other things to...
At the Board of Elections, none.
None?
No.
Okay.
I don't know if they don't let people do that there because there was a police presence. So I'm not sure what the vibe is. I don't normally vote there.
At least in 2012, I voted downtown in 2012, the presidential election. And as soon as I went down there, I was like convinced Obama was going to beat Romney because the demographics voting downtown were like 95-5 black. And I went, This is a very good sign for Obama.
Yeah, but I mean, it's that's such a small view of it.
Like, it is,
but I mean, you also have to look at where you are. Yes, I mean, like, where do, like, a majority of the white people in the Cleveland area don't live in downtown Cleveland, and they don't live on the east side. I mean, they do live on the east side, but it's very, like, Cleveland is very segregated.
Yeah.
So, you know, going to downtown
I was so convinced is because of the number of people. It was because turnout was such a big deal.
Okay, I mean, maybe, but I mean, even if you go there, even if there were a few less people, it's still not a good way to really be able to gauge it. And it's not, I mean, it's nothing against you, but I think that's a problem where people get so caught up in polling and they get, I mean, like, it's such a small sample size, it doesn't really tell you you don't have enough data to actually make, and this isn't an attack on you and your observation, but in general, you know, like, I hear these polls come out. You know, and it's just like, oh, well, we talked to, you listen to the number of people polled, like, oh, we talked to 500 people. Like, okay, there's 300 million people in the fucking United States.
Right.
Right? I mean, talked to 500 people on the phone, or you took, you know, 100, you know, you got 100 surveys kicked back to you on the internet. Like, that's not polling, and that's not telling you anything.
Well, I think total number of people voting tells you something, because typically when people come out in numbers, that's a big deal, especially in,
But the flip side of it is, if you would have went to Rocky River, there would have been a ton of white people voting.
Not early voting, because there is no early voting in Rocky River.
Okay.
So, well, no, that's my point is, if you get people out to vote, especially, I mean, we saw what the black vote did in the Roy Moore election. Black people came out in numbers and won a race that was considered unwinnable for the Democrats. So volume matters in this case, and we'll get to that in a minute. I want to finish up talking about the Trump ad. So this has been, for a midterm election, seems like just the most stumped for by the big names race that I can think of. Obama was out, Oprah was out, Will Ferrell, Mike Pence, Trump. They're all going out in doing a lot of campaigning and pushing the "you need to vote for our party" stuff. Trump ran an ad featuring a Mexican immigrant, not even immigrant, a guy who crossed the border multiple times, was arrested multiple times on drug charges, killed a couple of police officers in Arizona, and Trump basically did the, if you vote for Democrats, you're voting for the people who let this guy kill this cop, or these cops, I think it was two. The guy, I forget the guy's name, and again, I don't really need to give him oxygen. This happened in the late 90s, actually, sorry, early 2000s. And this ad got a ton of run in the media, especially the CNN type saying, you know, this is a racist ad. Did you get to see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
And?
I mean, is it... The thing, I mean, the guy got in and out of the country, and he was a bad guy. I think part of the problem is, like, it's, I don't see it as racist. I mean, well, here's the problem. It is because it's not, though. It's not, he's using a specific example of saying, here's a bad guy who's coming into our country and doing bad things, therefore, because this type of person
right.
could be duplicated, then we need to secure our border. See, my issue with the border, I may not fall in line with the party or with other people on this, or progressives or liberals or whatever you want to call it, because I tend to agree that we should probably secure our border. Right? I mean, I just, this whole idea of no borders and everybody just kind of cross, whatever. I mean, we've seen there's... Just the idea of having an open border doesn't just vibe with me.
All right.
Right? I mean, it just does. It doesn't seem like a good idea. And a lot of what you have coming across are migrants looking for work. Right?
Right.
That's a majority of what you have coming across the southern border. But we do also know that there is an influx of drugs that comes in. Now, my argument is, like they say, put up a wall. Okay, put up a wall if you want. Right? I really don't give a shit one way or another. It's going to cost a lot of money. And listen, this government just blows money left and right. They spent $300,000 on cups, right, on mugs for fighter pilots. So, I mean, are we really that upset about the money that they spend? It doesn't fucking matter. So I just think if you want to put up a wall, put up a goddamn wall. Put it up. Let's see what it does. And all it's going to do is reduce the number of migrant workers that come across, right? But the drugs are still going to come in. You know why? Because what the fuck are you going to do about the ports of entry at you know, along the coast with all those shipping containers where you only check... You know, 1% of them that come in, right?
I mean, there's one group of people that are innovative enough to get their product across the border. It's
drug dealers.
I mean, submarines, tunnels.
Right. We've seen some of the craziest shit that Escobar did, and pick a famous drug dealer.
I forget the name.
But
who was the guy who escaped twice? Like,
El Chapo.
There we go.
Just the crazy shit that these people do. So. You want to put a wall up, fine, put it up. And it'll slow them down for a little bit, but they're going to find a way to get it in. Some of the shit comes in through Canada. You know what I mean? Like, some of the shit is coming directly from fucking China. So maybe it slows it down some. Maybe there's a value there, right? I mean, I know that you're skeptical of it, but I can't say that one way or another. I don't think it helps as much as people say it does. And if you look at the majority of people here that are here illegally, most of them are here on expired visas, so they came... legal initially, right, and then stayed. They just never left. So, you know, that seems to be a bigger issue. But if you think that, you know, spending $25 billion on a wall along the southern border is going to solve all your problems, then go ahead. I say let him do it. And then when they're still coming in and guys like this in his ad are still getting in, then you realize, like, okay, it has nothing to do with party. The Democrats didn't let that guy in. The Republicans weren't going to be able to keep him out, right?
Right.
I think the guy came in when Bush was in when
he came
Bush
back
was in office.
Bush and he got arrested in Joe Arpaio's district.
Right. And then got so, back. I mean, it's like if people want to. I mean, the country is enormous, right? I mean, like, there's like you can't guard every inch and every foot of it, so people will find a way in one way or another. And I'm not saying don't do anything about it, but you know, to position it as. Well, the Democrats let him in because of their policy. Bullshit. The guy was going to find a way in one way or another.
And he was doing it on drug business, and that led to the murders.
Right. I mean, like, you should have, like, either throw him in jail for an extended period of time or I don't know. I won't say what I was initially thinking.
You.
But
all right. But a lot of this was played off the whole, the caravan is coming. I think the caravan is coming is one of the most blatant, fear-mongering... And I'm going to go ahead and use the word silly ways to inspire voters who hate dark people coming over the border that I've ever seen.
Well, it goes both ways. This one definitely goes both ways because you're right. It is fear-mongering by Trump, right? He started it. It's like, oh, just got word that there's a caravan of, you know, people coming from Honduras and they need to turn back. Okay. So totally get what you're saying, right? And then he drums it up like, oh, there's terrorists from ISIS in the group. There's
Middle Easterners.
And there's rapists and Middle Easterners.
Honduras.
And they're all middle-aged, or they're all, you know, fighting-aged men. You know, and CNN spinning it. It's just mothers and babies. That's all that's there. How could you be so cruel? Right? Like, the truth's somewhere in the middle. Right? There's probably, I mean, it's a bunch of, it's just a bunch of people, generally, coming from a poor country. It's not something that was put together by George Soros. Right? It's something that was put together by revolutionaries in Honduras and, you know, some were from Venezuela and others, and just they're more pissed off at their own government. So they're saying, hey, you guys leave and say it's because the government is so terrible so we can get this thing turned around.
Well, it's also because they're fleeing, like,
a war zone
created by drug cartels.
Right. I mean, you have a war zone created by drug cartels, and then you have the fact that there's just no money, and these people are literally working themselves to death for and getting absolutely nothing in return, and they would rather risk a, you know, 2,000-mile trek to a country where they may end up getting, you know, thrown in jail or who knows what might happen to them. They'd rather risk that happening than stay where they are.
It really...
I mean, you don't need a mastermind to figure out that maybe it's a good idea for people to leave a situation like that.
I know damn well if I was in their shoes, I would be trying to get the fuck out too.
Right.
I have no beef with anyone who's fleeing that kind of thing. Now, again, open borders, not necessarily a good thing. We could get to the root of the problem.
I get why they're leaving. I don't necessarily agree that we need to have open borders to just accept anyone that's willing to come across. And, you know, there needs to be a process, right? There needs to be a process, and there is, whether it'll be followed is a different question. Where I see this comes in on both sides, you have, you know, CNN, who basically anything that Trump says, you know, people at CNN are going to say the opposite, right? I mean, he could say the sun is yellow, they'll be like, fuck it, the sun's purple, right? I mean, like, that's just kind of where they're at right now, and it's really obnoxious, right? Like, Don Lemon, like, I am really tired of hearing Don Lemon's hot takes on social justice. Like, I'm really over the whole Don Lemon effect. He was really funny one time on New Year's Eve. And after that, he's been just, he's been really annoying ever since. But, you know, I mean, just this week, some organization filed a lawsuit against the president and stating, like, on behalf of the caravan.
Okay, I didn't know about this.
And it's insane, right? And people are saying, oh, the caravan filed a lawsuit. No, they didn't. There's a group here in the United States.
The caravan can't really file a lawsuit because they're not Americans.
Well, exactly. But this group, they filed the lawsuit for the caravan. And those are the sort of things, right, that give the Alex Jones type and the conspiracy nuts who, you know, everything goes back to George Soros, right? Oh, the George Soros-funded group. Now, this particular group is not a George Soros-funded group. But that's the sort of thing that feeds that sort of... It's a big conspiracy by the liberals
The liberal supervillain.
Right, to invade the country with brown people, to take it over and turn it into a social, you know, a socialist society, and then enslave everybody and burn the world down. I don't know what they think is going to happen, but that's the, you know, that's the trope that's, you know, spit by everybody on the MAGA conservative front, right?
Right.
Like, the brown people are coming to take your jobs, but they're also going to be on welfare, and they're going to drag the economy down, and they're going to invade your country and take it over, and then they're going to turn it socialist, and then once they turn it socialist, there's going to be a dictator, and then once there's a dictator, then we're going to be at war with everybody, and the world's going to end. That's kind of
the thought process. That's the narrative, yeah. So, speaking of the narrative... So the caravan thing, like I said, I consider a fear-mongering tool, but...
I mean, it's true, they're coming, but they're not going to get here in time for the election. True. That's the other thing. Like, they were pushing it because they were saying they were going to show up...
And vote.
And the people were saying they were going to show up and vote, right? Like, I mean, like, you know, James Woods, who is he? He's, you know, a has-been actor, but he's really conservative, and he's got a huge following. He's got a huge platform, right? Yeah. He's got over, you know, he's got millions of people that follow him on Twitter. And so when James Woods says that the migrants are showing up to vote, then a million people who follow him, right? The millions of people who follow him look at that and they go and they repeat it, and then it becomes something that you hear it on fucking CNN, right? They're coming to vote. They're coming. They're going to tip the scales. This is how the Democrats plan to win. They're going to use these illegal, right? Because
I didn't hear it
because of voter fraud, right? Like they push the whole voter fraud narrative, and they're purging they're purging ballot or voting reels left and right because there's all these dead people that have been voting and, you know, children that are not of age and stolen identities and all this shit is happening right under our noses and we don't even know it. And that's why the caravan is coming too.
Right. Even though it won't get here until January at the earliest. I mean,
right. And then when they do, like what sort of shape are they going to be in?
Well, right? And so Trump said, we're going to send troops to the border. And again, this is political posturing for the most part. But that's a scary thing for me from a human rights perspective because, granted...
I don't think it's political posturing. I think he's sending troops to the border.
Okay, do you think they're going to... So, Trump said, basically, if they throw stones at our military the way they did to the Mexican military, that we're going to answer with... He said, treat a stone like it was fired from a rifle because a projectile is a projectile, basically. And I know that's not an exact quote, but that was the fundamentals of it.
You know what's funny? A little pull it behind the curtain. Like, we talked about this before he said that.
Yeah, we did.
And I said, my fear, what did I tell you my fear was?
That someone would throw a rock and get shot.
Right. And then my other fear was, you know, that Trump would say exactly what he said, right? That if anyone throws a stone, then we shoot you, right? Like, that's my fear because now that he said it, if something happens, then the defense is, it's a command that I received from the commander-in-chief. He said it. You know, everyone heard it. So what did you want me to do? Right? Now, there's rules, there's rules of engagement for soldiers. And, I don't know enough to make a judgment call on whether they should fire or they shouldn't if there's a rock thrown at them. Right? But, there's gray area. But... if that happens, whether we can explain it or justify it or whatever, if it happens, that's the worst possible situation that could happen, right? Whether it's one soldier or one soldier starts it and a bunch of them shoot and fire, that is the last thing that you want to happen, right? And I think it's terrifying that he's putting those soldiers in that position to where that could happen. Right, knowing what's coming, and then how do you stop? I don't know.
In the bigger picture, what does that do to us internationally? Right? I mean, we will be accused of human rights violations by
who? Here's the question.
Okay.
What impact did it have on Israel?
Essentially none, but Israel's fighting out of a box all the time anyway. I mean, Israel has our support unconditionally, and... that's about it.
Okay. Right? But, I mean...
and that's a bit of a different situation because there is a history of terrorism between the Palestinians and the Israelis. There is no Honduran... there's never been a 16-year-old Honduran girl who ran into a mall in Austin, Texas and blew herself up. So, the Israelis, I mean, they're responding to a different situation than this caravan.
Well, right. I mean, but according to Trump, there's terrorists in there. There could be. That's what he said.
And I know he did. And,
but I think, I mean, could, so and the question is...
the Easter Bunny could be in there too. We don't want to ruin Easter, do we? So we shouldn't shoot because we might kill the Easter Bunny.
I still do not understand the Easter Bunny. I don't. I don't understand where it came from. I don't get the tradition. It's just bizarre to me.
Okay.
I don't understand I don't understand dying eggs. And why is the Easter Bunny leaving eggs? Where did he get the eggs or she get the eggs? Easter bunnies don't lay eggs.
I don't know what gender the Easter bunny is.
Right. I mean, so I don't know. It's bizarre.
But we still know about the Easter bunny getting shot at the U.S.-Mexico border because he or she was in
I don't know how comfortable I feel with the Easter bunny in general, knowing what its potential powers are. So actually, I wouldn't mind if the Easter bunny got shot at the border.
Oh, that you being should said, say about the Easter bunny.
That being said, I don't want anyone being shot at the border. So it's terrifying to me that the president is putting these soldiers in this position, and I do worry about obviously the safety of the soldiers, but we don't want innocent people being killed at the border,
right?
And it's such a gray area that you're asking for a really, really horrible situation to break off, and then what do we do, right? Yeah, I mean, because we will have, there will be questions in terms of the international community. Mexico is going to have to take a stance, right? Is Mexico just going to sit there and take it? Is Canada going to sit there and take it? Canada probably will, because, I mean, they're just not...
Doesn't affect their border. Right,
they'll be really pissed about it, and they'll come out and say some really harsh things, but that'll be it. Mexico, I don't know. You know, the other, you know, the countries where these people are from, how do they respond?
Right.
You know, do they have the ability to respond? And then no. What about our other international partners? You know, what I mean, you know, UK, Germany, all that, they're going to say whatever. And their argument is like, listen, we have open borders. We're not thrilled about the situation that we have going on right now, but we haven't killed anybody trying to come into our country that's innocent. And you have.
Right.
And so I don't know how it plays. I don't have a good answer. I really don't.
I mean, the best way for this to play out is for it not to happen. I don't know what will come of it.
But what do we do about 2,000 or 3,000 people just saying, all right, well, we're coming there, so.
Funnel them through the refugee system and handle that the way it is. I mean, I'm no expert in refugee immigration law, but they are fleeing from a situation that I don't even want to think about.
I went to law school with a girl who actually, like, randomly, I think she's from, like, Louisiana, moved down to Alabama, and became an immigration lawyer.
All right.
I'm thinking maybe we talk to her. Maybe I see if I can get her to
to
join us. I haven't talked to her in a long time, but it may be worthwhile to talk to her and have her on, just to kind of get her vantage point. You know, all sometime next week before the caravan gets here. I think we got a little bit of time.
I actually knew an immigration lawyer from Buffalo, and I probably have her card somewhere. But geez, who knows where? Fuck you. All right, changing topics. Let's get a little bit more domestic.
Why? Because there's a couple reasons why I could be laughing.
You are laughing because my place is not the most organized place ever.
That's
one of the main reasons. Are there other reasons?
Well, in this day and age, who's really keeping business cards? You know.
Oh, I do.
Right.
All right. Anyway. So let's get more domestic. We've talked about Kanye West a bunch of times, and the whole Kanye West, Candace Owens, Tommy Lauren situation to me is very entertaining, mm-hmm. whether it should be or not. So Candace Owens is trying to start the Blexit movement, the exiting the Democratic Party. If you know Candace Owens, she's a former Democrat who's gone hardcore right wing. I'm not particularly a fan. And she gave Kanye credit for redesigning their logo. And Kanye basically said, enough, you're sending messages I don't want to send. He basically said that he gave her request to a friend of his who's a logo developer. That guy didn't want to be associated with the cause of Blexit. So he took, you know, credit, blame, whatever you want to call it. And then when it got pushed onto him, he just said, enough is enough. Now, I'm not a huge Kanye fan. Can we steer away and let me ask you a question? From a musical perspective, do you consider Kanye to be that great?
Yeah.
Do you?
I mean, his recent stuff has been garbage, but
all right.
His... College Dropout, Late Registration, those are hip-hop classics, and he will forever hold a place in hip-hop lore because of those albums, period.
All right.
You don't get it.
No, I don't, and that's fine.
But, I mean, you're not, it's not your
It's not my
space.
Demographic, it's not my type of music, fair.
But he's done, like, some of the things that he's put together, you know, the music that he's composed, and he's... When he's on his game, he is he's the best.
Okay.
He's been off his game for a while, but he's also, he loves to experiment and do wild and crazy shit with his music. So as a fan, you know, you have to sit through a couple really, you know, shitty albums of weird stuff going on where you feel like maybe it'd be better if you were on mushrooms, you know, to figure out what you're listening to. That being said, you know, This situation with him and Trump and MAGA and Candace Owens, you know, he's a guy who's trying to figure some things out. And he's been trying to figure things out for a while. His mom died and it really left him in a bad place. And, you know, losing a parent impacts people differently. And when you have the meteoric rise that he had, you need someone to kind of hold you to kind of keep you sane.
Sure. Right?
And that was his mom. And then she left. And then he, and this sounds, you know, kind of crazy, but then all he had was Jay-Z, Beyonce, and Kim Kardashian.
Okay.
Right? And then by the time he became famous, Jay-Z was already a superstar, right? And already married to Beyonce. And Beyonce was a superstar, megastar. Like, and those two combined are megastars. So they live in a different stratosphere, right? And so when his mom dies, that's all that he has. And while, you know, he's constantly searching for a father figure, you know, like especially once his mom was gone. So, you know, he's just out there searching, and whether, you know, and he, you know, yeah, maybe there were some issues with some painkillers and drugs and alcohol. Okay, fine. You have all that. So I think what Kanye recognized was that, you know, there's plenty to not like about Trump, but maybe there are redeeming qualities that I need to open my mind to and figure out what they are. And instead of bashing everything he does at every turn, maybe I'll try to build a bridge with this guy and the people who think like him. And by building that bridge, maybe we can solve more problems by working together than we can apart. Kanye's issue was articulation. Great musician, not the best communicator.
All right.
So he communicated his points poorly. You know, he's got his team of guys around him who are trying to feed him information that he doesn't himself know, understand, or process. So people, like, he's pulling his information from headlines. Like, he's just your average Twitter user, right, who only sees the headline, the thing that pulls you in. So then he's said that he's not a reader. He said that he doesn't study. So you take that level of that lack of knowledge and nuance, and then you jump onto the political scene and you just start spewing, you know, whatever the last thing you saw on Twitter, and now you get this situation, right? Like, he said, he read a couple tweets from Candace Owens and said, I like how Candace Owens thinks, right? So now all of a sudden, Trump gets a hold of it and says, oh, well, Kanye's got it, right? I like this Candace Owens woman. So I like him. I like her. He says he likes her. So now I like him. So now Trump has embraced him. So Kanye flips around and says, all right, well, I'm going to go embrace Trump in this whole thing, and I'm going to build a bridge of unity, and it's going to be great. Right? And it kind of works out for him. There's some backlash, and he reaches out, and he's like, I'm trying to build bonds. I'm trying to do the whole thing. Right? And then he gets used in a situation that he doesn't like. It's impacting his shoe sales and things like that. So it's impacting his money. And so now he's just like, all right, you know what? Fuck it. Screw everybody. I'm just going to step back. You know, I mean, and that's where he's at with this. You know, is he a villain to black people? You know, if you look on social media, a lot will say yes.
A lot of my friends in the comedy scene are
just, you know, if Wakanda was a real place and we were, and black people were all headed there, you know, would Kanye be on the invite list? The answer is probably no, as it stands right now. How do I see him? I see him as a guy who just got lost. And I'm not saying that he was lost because he was supporting Trump. I'm saying just he was just generally lost. And I don't know if he's found right now. And just because he's walking away from politics, I'm not saying he's figured anything out. But I'm just saying he's a guy who needs to figure a lot out that has nothing to do with politics. And he's not a politician. We don't need him to be a politician. I need Kanye to make great music. And I'd prefer if he go figure out who he is as a person, get himself right, and, you know, hopefully he can put out music that's really great. Or maybe he never puts anything out again, and that's fine. If it's good for him and it keeps him healthy and he's able to take care of his kids and his wife, then go ahead and go do whatever you need to do. And I'll just listen to Late Registration and College Dropout and, you know, all those great tracks and still be just as happy. That's how I feel about Kanye West.
All right. Again, I have no problem with, I always say, if you're Kanye West or Tim Robbins or Alec Baldwin, and you want to use your platform for political reasons, you got a platform, feel free to use it. So I have no problem with him doing his thing. When he, you know, marched into TMZ and was accused of going nuts, if you watch the long form version of that, he actually was trying to be reasonable. It just, things don't go well when Kanye West marches into TMZ.
I just think the guy is not a great communicator. One-on-one, like when he married Kim Kardashian, right? I mean, as crazy as that whole situation is, and yes, she's famous for nothing and blah, blah, blah. But when he married her, like, if he, and even if you watch the show Keeping Up with the Kardashians, he's not in the show a lot. And when he is, he tries to stay out of the cameras, right? He's a relatively shy, as crazy as it sounds. I know it sounds like it's oxymoron to say he's shy and reserved. When you think of Kanye West, because the guy made an album called Yeezus, so there's got to be some narcissistic tendencies in there one way or another. But I think he puts on a persona. He has a character that he plays called Yeezy or Kanye West or whatever. There's a Kanye West, the performer, but then in his private life, in his day-to-day, he's a completely different human being. And that's a human being who's trying to figure out right now who and what he is. And he tried to dabble in politics, and I think it got him burned a little bit, maybe financially, and now he's stepping back.
All right. So what is your take? So Candace Owens and Tommy Lauren got into a Twitter fight, and they both talked about how they weren't going to dignify the other by getting into a Twitter fight
while they were getting in a Twitter fight.
And so just not a come at me, bro, just a general question. Do you think they realize that they're elevating each other, or are they genuinely fighting for a position of power in the...
Nah, man. I think that... I mean, I don't know if they're necessarily elevating each other. I think they...
Making themselves relevant is what I mean by that.
Nah, because they exposed... Tommy Lauren exposed herself a little bit on that one. Right? Tommy should have just sat back and not said anything. By engaging, like, she has now given Candace Owens a platform, so I guess the answer is... No, to your question.
Okay, so I don't think someone's taking more out of this than Tommy Lauren. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Becoming more relevant.
Right. Like she's definitely using it to her advantage. And it I think there's probably a small percentage of people who are looking at this situation, who are big either Tommy Lauren or who are Tommy Lauren supporters, looking at it and saying, "Wait, hold on. Now wait. What are you are you accusing her of doing? Because what is it? Why are you here on this platform? Why do you have so many, right? I mean, because if you look at how these people came up, right? Like, what qualifies Tommy Lauren to be a political analyst? Please tell me.
I have no, you know what?
Oh, I know.
Well, Glenn Beck was her launching point, right? Mm-hmm. So she got on his show.
I mean, I think she started on YouTube.
Okay.
But,
and she basically was a hot young blonde girl who spewed the right wing.
Listen, narrative. We got nothing against hot young blonde girls.
No, we don't.
Or hot older blonde girls. We don't have anything against hot blonde girls. But that being said, I would like to think that in order to be a political analyst, right, who represents a multimedia national multimedia conglomerate like Fox News. Like the Blaze, what's your background, right? I know that she graduated from either a school in Texas or a school in South Dakota or something like that, with a degree in journalism.
All right.
And that's about it.
Okay.
And Candace Owens she graduated from high school in Connecticut, and then she went to the University of Rhode Island, and then... She studied journalism but didn't graduate, and so she went to YouTube, said, I'm black, I used to be a Democrat, now I'm a conservative, and follow me, right? And people have. Now she's also a very attractive black girl.
Yes, she is.
And, you know, attractive women have always been a magnet for a certain level of attention. So
Sarah Palin was a vice presidential nominee, 99% based on her appearance. Now, but I would argue with Republicans who were like, oh, I'd vote for her because she's hot. I don't care if she's hot. She's not a vice presidential qualified person.
My issue isn't with the gender. I actually don't really give a shit because I get asked this question about a number of male.
Mm-hmm. Dan Quayle was Bush's vice president because he was a good-looking guy, and I was in college in those days, and I remember a girl saying, I just like him because he's so attractive. I'm like,
he's got all that
dope.
Hair.
He's comb a over. Dope.
But... The issue is just what experience do either of them really have to draw on, right? To kind of command the attention and authority that they do. Now, part of that is good job by them in leveraging whatever whatever they had in order to get to where they are. So I can't knock it, right? Because the same question could be asked of you and I.
Sure.
Right? Now,
I'm not here for my looks.
Right, neither am I. Well, it depends on. If you're looking at my most recent picture, then
looking at the deadlift.
Right. If you're in the muscles, there you go. You know. But I did study politics, and political science in college, and went to law school. You know, became a lawyer, and have experience in the criminal justice system, and experience in the private sector, and you know, real estate development and housing development, and now
and there's a lot of politics that come into play in that terms of mostly local, but
right. I mean, local and state and various states. So I guess where I was going to say, we don't have those qualifications either. I guess I can say that I can. I do to a certain degree. But all that to say is, like, I think there were a few people who looked at Tommy Lauren at that moment when she goes on the passive aggressive attack of Candace Owens and says, well, hold on, right? Like, we're all in this together and you're attacking her. What do you bring to the table? And when you start to break it down, there's not a lot there, right? And there's some people who saw that, and I think they both exposed themselves a little bit, but it's done more for Candace than it's done for Tommy. And Tommy is even she's starting to see her star fade a little bit. I know that there was, there's a pretty big, I can't remember if it was Politicon or one of the other big political conferences where you get a lot of multimedia giants in there. And Tommy Lauren's room that they had where she was the guest speaker was empty the whole time. Because there was a reporter there from The Root, or a contributor from The Root, who spent like a lot of time there to see if, you know, when he got there, there were no crowds. And then so he stayed for a while to figure out if the crowds were coming. And he was there, he left, he came back, he stayed more, and they never came. So she's not quite commanding the same audience that she was.
The conversation you just brought up, though, about, like, what are their qualifications? What are Alex Jones's qualifications? He is neither female nor attractive, and yet he said the right thing.
He's a man's man.
He is that.
He's a man's man.
So they say.
He's got his own supplement line.
Don't make me do it. Don't make me do it.
Sam, I don't feel well. Do me a favor.
Oh, fair. Okay, for you, I'll do that. I won't grant this favor always, but this.
Well, yeah, but that's what I was saying. Like, there's plenty of males you can go down. Like,
Rush Limbaugh is a
right.
I think Rush Limbaugh.
What about
dropout?
Right. What about Wilco?
Oh, geez.
What are his qualifications? Wilco, right.
Yeah.
He went to college in Florida. Was on the radio on his college station, and then has transformed himself into a conservative commentator. And I won't knock the hustle. It's good work if you can get it. But at some point in time, you have to start to look at who are you looking at? Who are you taking your information from?
Right.
Right. And what level of value are you putting into it? And, you know, you can go on the attack and say, well, you can't just attack someone because they didn't go to Harvard or Yale. I'm not saying that they didn't go to Harvard, but I'm saying, what experiences are they drawing from to put this information out there and then direct people on how they should think, right? Or give or intimate how people should think, right? I mean, and I think that is something that people need to pay attention to.
Sure.
Right? What are your sources of information? How much credibility are you giving it, and why are you giving it so much credibility?
That's an across the board thing. I love Keith Olbermann as a sports commentator. As a political guy, you decided suddenly you want to be a political guy. He's done some stuff I really thought was well spoken and well thought out, but what's his, so the whole, what makes you qualified is you decided you were qualified. I mean, I'm a technical consultant.
Someone hired you and they paid you and they said, all right, we like you.
Say that about me. I worked for 15 years in pharmaceutical manufacturing as an engineer. Then one day I said, I'm a technical consultant now. And the way I got treated professionally changed dramatically once I had that word behind my name.
Yeah. I mean, and so again, I won't knock the hustle necessarily, but if you're going to put a certain level of credibility to these people that you're getting your information from, just kind of stop and think, why?
Right. And the difference in my case is my actions are science and engineering based, not purely opinion and rhetoric. All right. So last week we talked about Megyn Kelly and the blackface comment that ultimately got her removed from NBC.
My girl's still walking away with $65 million.
Now, talk about that's good work if you can get it.
Yeah.
If you can fire me and give me $65 million.
It's not as bad as Sam Bradford in the NFL. It's not as bad a heist job as that.
I
He's made $123 million.
But he's still playing, right?
He got released.
Oh, did he?
From Arizona.
I've been paying attention to sport. When did that happen? Like 2 weeks ago?
No, he got released like this week.
Okay.
Dude's made $123 million.
$123,000 is a big drop off.
And I think he's for, in that time, he's played in, I think, less than 50 games or something like that. It's crazy. Or maybe less than 100 games.
Good for him.
Either way.
All right. Back to Megyn Kelly. So she got let go from NBC. I would argue because she really wasn't working out there. She made the jump from Fox. It didn't work out well. They tried her in a couple different roles. And she made the comment about it used to be okay to dress in blackface. Why is it not? Which is silly. We've talked about that enough. But
well, that's not what she said.
What'd she say?
She said she didn't understand the big deal about... Right, okay. She didn't say you used to be able to do this, now
okay.
You can't.
Okay.
She just said, she's just saying, I don't see the big deal. The person was dressing up as a character and not being disrespectful and, you know, truly appropriating the culture.
I got now, some shit on DMs from what I said last week where I said context matters.
Right, and it does, and I think we have to just, like, listen, do I think she should have been fired? No. But I also don't think she was fired because of this comment. I think this was the last thing.
Excuse.
This was the pretty bow that they were able to wrap it up and put it on and boot her and say, all right, let's figure it out. Right? Because NBC caught a lot of flack when they did that because there was a really talented black girl at NBC who had a show in that time slot that was popular, that had much better ratings than Megyn Kelly has ever been able to get. And not only did they lose that viewership, but they lost that talent. She said, fuck NBC, and left. And now... they're stuck with Megyn Kelly, her big-ass contract, and no viewership, you know, relatively speaking, especially to what they had to a person who they were paying a hell of a lot less. And then she goes and she makes a stupid comment. Now, was the comment that big of a deal? No. Right? I mean, I think context does matter. And I think that if people want to dress up as characters, like Al Roker dressed up as Doc Brown.
And the right went nuts and said, how is this okay?
How is this okay?
Let me answer that, please.
Okay.
He didn't try to hide his race. He dressed up as a character. If he would have put on whiteface, I would have given exactly zero fucks. There is a different standard, right? Because there were never black people doing minstrel shows.
Yes.
Or white minstrel shows. There was the reverse, so there is a different standard there. Like during, and I accept that.
During the Jim Crow era, it was used as a way to denigrate and dehumanize black people.
Right.
Right. And it was a way to say, listen, you don't want those jigaboos running around you because this is how they act. You know, and you know, like we can't educate them. They can't work. They can't do this. They can't do that. It was another tool in the box of weaponry that was used against black people on a systematic, wide scale, large basis. And so you take that and you fast forward and say, oh, well, we don't have Jim Crow laws anymore. We're past segregation. Everything's fine. Everything's back on the table. No, it's not, right? I mean, you have to be careful, but there's context, and it's not black and white. There's not clear lines. There's a lot of gray area. And if I got a little girl who wants to dress up as Diana Ross or a grown woman or whoever it was, a person that wants to dress up as Diana Ross, and that person happens to be white, as long as they're not, you know, showing Diana, being disrespectful to Diana Ross as a person or as a black person, then I don't really give a shit. Right, but if that person is then going to a party, getting blacked out drunk and saying, look at me, I'm that nigger bitch Diana Ross, and I'm coming to take your man, and blah, 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 then yes, we've got a problem.
That's a line.
Right? But so we can't police this. So should Megyn Kelly have been fired? No, but it was a dumb comment. Like, you have to be more aware of the situation, aware of the climate, and as a person who's on TV, again, with a platform... Right, there's a certain, like, I'm sorry.
Huge platform, morning NBC.
Right, you have a huge platform. I'm sorry if it's hard to keep track of it, but you're getting paid an assload amount of money. That is a specific scientific term, assload. You are being paid an assload amount of money. I'm sorry if you have to think before you fucking speak. So, should she have been fired? Probably not, but it's business. It happens. Suck it up and move on, Buttercup. I think you'll be okay with your millions and millions of dollars.
And what I want to call out, though, is the outrage culture of Al Roker did this, it's just as bad. Shut the fuck up. Al Roker dressing up as Doc Brown. First of all, Al Roker is a goofy guy to begin with. But regardless, He dressed up as a character from a movie when they were told to dress up in 80s characters movies. If you would have said to him, and you can only dress up as Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours because...
Well, and that's the weird... I mean, and that kind of goes back to, like, listen, in the 80s, y'all didn't have us in a ton of movies, right? Like, we didn't... It's not like we had a lot of options, right? Like, so, I, you know, for, I mean, after a while...
Dress up as Dolomite. That was 60s, I think. I just wanted to say Dolomite.
But, I mean...
You know, they're doing a remake of Dolomite or a like a... Dolomite historical piece starring Craig Robinson.
Are you serious?
Yeah. He was talking, he was on the Hancock Show the other day talking about it.
Okay.
Sorry.
Interesting.
It is interesting to me. It's that, funny to me. When I hear Dolomite, all I think of is the movie The Great White Hype. That was Damon Wayans, like, inspirational movie before he goes in for the big fight.
You love that movie.
I do love that movie. All right, man. You want to call it a day? Mm-hmm. We've gotten, I made things weird, as I love doing. But good talking to you. Hope you feel better. Again, that picture makes you look like a bad motherfucker. 771 is that a personal record? No. Mm-hmm. You did 800 before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry. We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. We drank Black Dog, Black Reserve, Scotch-style whiskey today from India. I gave it an 89. Steve needs his taste buds back. Thank you for listening, and we're out of here.